This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future.
My name is Stuart Burtz and I have with us today
Bob Lawrence,
Finlay Mason
and Roger Munn.
Okay, and now Bob is the person of particular interest today, and he was telling us some actually very interesting stories about how he came to New Zealand and his early life. You came here in about 1956.
Yes, at the end of 56. I remember it well because the All Blacks had lost to the Lions. No, I've got that wrong.
South Africa.
Was it South Africa, 56? I found that interesting that the whole country seemed to go into some sort of mourning.
Yes, because you wouldn't have the same impact in Britain. Were you a rugby player in Britain?
Funnily enough, I was, yes.
What position did you play in, Bob?
On the wing.
On the wing. Fast little guy, eh?
Well, I found that I was quite nippy, and I quickly learnt to pass the ball also very quickly.
The ball was meant to stop when it got to the wing.
but I didn't like being tackled, and, so that I got rid of it as soon as I could.
So do you think rugby in England was very different from rugby as you saw it in New Zealand in those days?
I think so. I think it was. It wasn't quite as
vigorous.
Yes, I think is the word, vigorous.
Yeah, it's more of a warm weather sport here, given our climate. Whereas in Britain, you'd play it in very cold weather.
Yes.
Nor was it part of the national psyche in England, perhaps.
Oh, no.
I went to a rugby playing school in England, but at all the break times, we'd all play football.
Soccer was the main thing. In fact, I went to a school that played soccer in one term and rugby in the other term, and of course in the summer it was cricket. So that's how I came to be playing rugby.
So you would have been, that would have been during the Second World War, would it, when you were at
it
school,
was yes yeah. I was evacuated when I was in the third form.
From where?
From the school was in Ramsgate in Kent, yeah, which was actually opposite the French coast. And the Germans set up guns to control the channel. And every now and then they would lob shells into
it. Guns that fired right across the channel.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes, they did. They had them, all right.
Ramsgate was quite a busy port during the war, but only with small craft, not big craft.
Did any of the boats from that port go across to Dunkirk? And
oh, yes, yeah, lots.
Because they would in that area, wouldn't they?
Yep.
Do you remember that happening?
Oh, the troops were brought over mainly to Dover, and from there they entrained to up to London, and I can remember the being down in Broadstairs station, and the ladies of Broadstairs were there on the station giving tea food to the troops as they went in.
And how did they look? The troops, how did they?
Pretty ragged, I imagine.
Yeah, they were. Yes, they
positive or downtrodden?
Well, they looked. They actually looked quite happy. The fact that they made it.
They weren't prisoners of war.
Yes. But it was. So that I was evacuated to Stafford, in the Midlands.
Mm. Oh, pottery area.
Mm. For some unknown reason, it was a sort of evacuation centre. And our school went there, and we moulded in with the grammar school in Stafford.
Did you stay with some people that you didn't know?
No, yes, I was billeted with people.
Yeah, were they kind to you?
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
With siblings, or you were separated from the rest of your family?
Well, yes, I had a younger brother who was evacuated at the same time. He went to a place called... I've forgotten. Oh, Uttoxeter, that's right. Uttoxeter, as they used to call it in Staffordshire. But it was a little town, a little market town. And he was in the junior school. By this time, in the third form, I was in the senior school.
So he'd be about 14
then? Yeah, no, I was... Well, I was born in December, so that I... you went up year by year, and so that if you were in December, you were with people who were born in January. They were almost a year older.
Yeah.
But I was always the youngest in the form, and so forth. But so I was in the third form, but very young.
Yeah. Okay.
So I was in the senior school, my younger brother was in the junior school, and eventually he came over to Stafford as well. But he was billeted with somebody else, and I actually saw, quite a bit of him, but it was not the same as being in the same family house.
Yeah.
As a matter of interest, Bob, when you were... living before you were evacuated, could you see or hear anything of the war that was going on? Or
no,
too far. Like
I honestly
no.
I don't.
I just wondered.
I can remember war breaking out because we were all around the radio, and there was the announcement.
Yeah.
And as soon as the Prime Minister Chamberlain had made the announcement, a siren rang, and it was a false alarm, but my God, it put the fear of God into everybody, because the Blitzkrieg had...
well, you didn't know what was coming, did you?
No, well, the Germans were doing very well in the army scene, and they'd taken over Paris by that time, and and Holland and Belgium had also gone, and quite clearly the French army had and the British army over there had not done very well. And they were being the British part was being evacuated at Dunkirk. I did know that, but in general I was only, well, I would have been 10 when the war started. I had to be old, about 11.
But you'd have seen some of the fighting, Battle of Britain with the aircraft.
Oh, yes, yes.
That would be overhead for
yes, it was very strange. They wouldn't let us back into the area that I was living in before I was evacuated until 1944. And we went back, and of course that was when the V1 rockets came over, and we were actually in more danger from them, because they had anti-aircraft batteries trying to get them down, and the fighter pilots tried to get them down, and quite a few dropped in and around where I lived.
Yeah.
But it was...
Did the V2s come after that in your area?
Yeah. Oh, no. They were...
Mostly aimed at London, weren't they?
Oh, all of them, yes. I don't recall a V2 hitting our place.
Okay.
But the V1s were squarey doodle bugs.
Yeah.
And as long as you could hear them moving and you weren't worried, it was... If the engine stopped, you knew that they were going to come down.
Pretty stupid, wasn't it? That was never going to win the war for the Germans. Complete waste of money.
Well, funnily enough, if it had happened a year earlier, if the technology had been developed sooner, they could easily have won the war, I think, because. There was no defence against the V2s, none at all.
Yeah, but they just didn't have the numbers. So.
No. Yeah. And by that time, they were bombing everything, so that. But the Germans had mobile V2
launchers.
Mm. And so that it was difficult for the Air Force to really locate them and find out what was happening.
Yeah. I think it was mostly up to the partisans over there, wasn't it, to try and find them and send the information over to England.
Yes, I think so, yes.
Yeah.
Well, that's
interesting.
So you had the war experience, and then you would have had national service after that.
Oh, no.
No?
No, because I was born in December... When I left sixth form, I was still only 17, and I got the results of my UE, the university entrance exam, in August or somewhere around there, and I had passed, I could get into university, but I now had between August and December to find a place in a university.
Okay.
And it was very difficult at the time for school leavers because 90% of all places were being kept for the ex-servicemen, which was reasonable, but it made life difficult for people like me who didn't want the thought of going into the army at 17, did not appeal.
No.
So, and also at that time it was difficult to get a scholarship to university. And so I signed up with the Kent County Council to become a teacher when I'd finished my degree. Now that gave me 4 years at university because I had 3 years to do my degree and 1 year I would have doing teacher's training.
So what did you study?
Hmm?
What was the subject, your major?
What happened was that I applied to London, first of all, because it was the nearest university to me. And they said, no, we're very sorry, we've got all the places booked with ex-servicemen. But there were four red brick universities, as they were called in England. That was Southampton, Reading, Exeter and Cardiff, I think. Not England, but Britain. They said, we've got a vacancy in Southampton. So I said, I'll take it. And so I went down to and the Kent County Council gave me the money, but it only covered tuition and staying in one of their hospitals down there. But everything else I had to find money for, and I used to work in the summer holidays and so. But I enjoyed it. But after I'd done this this whole the 4 years, conscription was still on in England.
What was the subject of your degree?
Oh, I'm sorry. The university, the external University of London degree, you first of all, there were two subjects. You had to choose your main subject, which in my case was chemistry, but you had to choose one other subject, and I chose physics. But you first of all had to change, you had to pass the physics degree at a general level.
Yeah.
So I really had two degrees, one in physics, but only at a general level, and then I went on to specialise in chemistry. And when the 4 years was up, I did this teacher's diploma, and it was run by Canterbury and not. It was run by Cambridge University. So I ended up with a degree from London and a diploma of education from Cambridge. I had not stepped foot in either place, which was rather
excellent.
Rather odd.
Well, New Zealand universities, originally, they were extensions of the UK
university. Mm. Well, just... can we go back a little tiny bit? What about your mother and father? What did your father do as a?
He learned to drive. This was at a time when very few people in England could drive. In fact, there were very few cars in our area.
Yeah.
He did a lot of delivery work for various organisations.
Oh, okay.
So he would deliver this stuff, and he seemed to enjoy it.
That's great.
And when the war started, he didn't want to leave the house. He didn't want to leave his house.
Yeah.
And you could only stay in the area if you were doing war work. Mm. Everybody else was cleared out. This was because we lived very close to an airfield called Manston. It was the first airfield that you come to when you fly over from...
The big target.
And it was being bombed quite severely.
Yeah.
But so he had to do war work, and he volunteered to become an ambulance driver.
Oh.
So he spent the war years as an ambulance driver.
Gosh.
So was he based in Britain for a lot of that time, or he was overseas?
Sorry?
Whereabouts was he based?
Oh, in Thanet, in where we were born.
Mm.
Okay, yep.
Mm. Amazing. Okay.
So then you did your teacher training, and then you started teaching?
No, they conscripted me. Despite the fact that Britain was very short of teachers.
And you were bonded, weren't you? They paid for you to go to university on the basis that you would then go and be a teacher.
Mm. But it was all very weird. Notwithstanding the fact that I expected to be the Kent County Council would get hold of me and would say, we'd like you to teach in anywhere, you know. This didn't happen. And what happened was that in the September, I got a letter telling me to report for an interview in London, at London University, where I had... This was the first time I'd set foot in London University, and there was a travel warrant to go with it, so that I had no choice, of course.
Thought you were going to be offered a teaching position, or realised it was...
No, it turned out that this is what happened. The Navy was short of particular people... After the war had ended, the Navy was very unhappy with the way that the Air Force had run the Fleet Air Arm. The Fleet Air Arm used to be under the auspices of the RAF, and they were interested mostly in Towers of bombing raids and things of that ilk. And of course the fighter planes, the Spitfires and Hurricanes, which did, you know, won the Battle of Britain, of course, were the heroes of the RAF. And the Coastal Command was very badly run, and so were the aircraft for the Navy. The Navy had to rely on biplanes, Swordfish, and it was terribly antiquated.
but it sank the Bismarck.
They did indeed, and they. But that was dead lucky because torpedo. Somebody, one of the torpedoes
hit the rudder.
Yeah, and. And so the Tirpitz went round and round, which was just sheer luck. They did very well to begin with against the Italians, of course, in Taranto, the same Swordfish. I mean, it was a good plane, but it was not a modern plane. It was shown up in the Pacific when, in fact, they turned to American planes towards the end of the war. But it was Coastal Command didn't provide support for the convoys, and there was a huge area of the Atlantic where the submarines, German submarines, could do what they liked. So after a lot of deliberation, the RAF agreed that the Navy could look after its own aircraft. But they said, you realise you're going to have to get your own engineers for the aircraft. You will need control officers and so forth. Mm. And you'll also need Met officers. Mm. It so happened that I was available at the right time for the Navy. Not that I made any difference, but they were setting up a meteorological service, and they wanted people with physics degrees. They'd been told that's what had to happen. So the fact. And the Met division was going to be run by the education branch of the Navy, in the instructor branch.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that I had this diploma in education from Cambridge, and the fact that I'd done a physics degree,
you're made for the job, weren't you?
Meant that.
No way out of that.
In fact, that they were looking for people with my qualifications. Mm. So when my name came up, I honestly had been expecting one of two things: either that I was to report to Aldershot or somewhere like that and do my 2 years in the army, or that I would be given a teaching job somewhere. Well, I went to this interview, and they offered me first. They said, you've got three choices. The first choice is you can go down the mines. Now, at that stage, Britain was very short of miners.
So it wasn't the Navy interviewing you then?
No, it was a London University group. There were three of them, you know, sitting at a table, and
So the university was allocating people for their...
Oh, no. They've been told... they've been told that what they wanted. I don't know how the organisation worked, but they certainly would know. So I was horrified, of course, at the thought of going down the mines. And they said, well, the second choice is you can go into the army for 2 years. You do basic training for 6 months, and after that they will decide, given that you've got a degree, that you you might have OLQ. I didn't have the slightest clue what OLQ was.
Officer Leadership Qualification.
Officer-like qualification. But I could see from his face that he thought that it was
we'll give three options. Two are absolutely appalling, and one is the one we want to choose.
And then he came
up
with the Navy one, and he said, but then the alternative, the third alternative is you can go in the Army, in the Navy, for 3 years. And for 1 year, you're being trained as a meteorologist. And I quite like the idea of that. I was 20. Was I? No, I was 21. And at 21, the difference between 2 and 3 years. And I found myself at the end of the interview an instructor lieutenant in the Navy, which was quite incredible.
Amazing.
They gave me chits. And told me how to get measured for a uniform, and that was in Gives in Regent Street in London.
And all the gold braiding and everything.
And of course, by this time, I was, I didn't quite know what the heck was happening, but I did as I was told, and. On the train going back, I kept thinking to myself, there's got to be a catch. There really has got to be a catch.
Yeah, yes, you would think that, yeah.
And the catch was, of course, that I went into the on the Navy list for 4 years. Mm.
What sort of salary was it?
Salary?
Yeah.
Well, it's... Can you remember what it was? It was. You have to remember that I was a penniless student.
Anything was.
And so that the money, it was a fortune as far as I was concerned. But what I also didn't know that most of it got eaten up by the fact that you had to pay extra money for being in the officer's mess. So I didn't save very much at all.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz. Support this program and others like it by giving a donation to NPR. More details at npr.nz.